Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Meriwether and Tharp, your source for Georgia divorce. Find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
There's always been a really silly debate that I think happens around college football. And by the way, this is like not the front page debate. This is the kind of thing that's just kind of gone on for years. As I said, not important, but sort of ever present. It's whether or not it's okay for fans of a team to say, we are going to be good this year. We are not, you know, to kind of treat the team as us, as, you know, if you're part of that. Listen, I'm a huge fan, and I've never, you know, pretend to be anything other than that. I typically don't say we when referencing Georgia, mostly out of respect for the players and the coaches who are actually on the field, doing the work, getting it done, acknowledging that I am not a part of that group who's really putting my life and reputation on the line every time Georgia goes out there and plays a game. However, I have never had a problem with any fan who does say we in reference to his favorite team or her favorite team, or to use us when talking about all of that, because I'm really glad that college football kind of conjures up that sense of pride and feeling a family, that you're a part of something. I'm glad that college football makes people feel that way. That's one of the reasons why I love doing this show each and every day. So while I don't personally use we when talking about Georgia, I'm really glad that other people kind of want to. That's something that I think is a really good thing all the way around. The reason why I bring that up, though, is because there are actually some accomplishments, even though when Georgia wins a game, we don't win it. I'm not playing it. When Georgia goes out and does something great, I'm not a part of the group that does that. There are a couple phenomenons that exist around college football that I do think are kind of a we accomplishment. For instance, when a game is big, it's not just the coaches and players who make that big. We saw that during the 2020 season, that the games were taking place. You had these, you know, huge name brands on television battling against each other, but the TV ratings were a little lower in 2020 than they had been in 2019, that we'd kind of come used to seeing in college football all the way around, because I guess the theory that I put out there is apparently fans do matter. Apparently the fans in the stands, the media hype before a game, apparently all of that does help create a certain atmosphere around college football that makes even more people want to tune in and play it and be a part of it. Apparently that really does matter. So when it comes to making a game big, it's not just coaches and players, the guys who are on the field who are doing that. I would say that the media around the game and certainly the fans who care about the game, I would say that they are certainly all a big part of that. Now, why do I bring this up? Because there was a list that popped up over the course of the last 24 hours or so that Georgia is number one on. And while you give the Georgia players credit for this, you give the Georgia coaches credit for this, it's not just Georgia coaches and players who accomplished this. This is from 247sports.com. You may be familiar with the website. Clint Buckley, the writer, I am not familiar with him. But what the headline says is the top 15 games on the 2021 college football schedule. You scroll through here, you see a good number of games. But when you get to number one on the list, the number one most anticipated game in all of college football, not just week one, not just non-conference, not just, you know, some sort of, you know, special parameter around the discussion, the number one game in all of college football for the upcoming season, according to the writer here for 247sports.com, is Georgia versus Clemson. Now, as I said before, in order to make something that big, you got to have big contribution from the fans. Both fan bases have to care about it. I think you've already seen some evidence this offseason. That is definitely true. You got to have, you know, people like me, blowhards that speak into a microphone for a living, kind of hyping this up. I'll be more than happy to do that job for you over the course of the next few months. But no matter how you get there, one way or another, 247 Sports says that Georgia-Clemson is the biggest game for the upcoming year. And in a weird sort of way, it kind of fills me with a sense of pride. I like being a part of the biggest game in college football, especially knowing that it's week one, and especially knowing it could usher in another series of really big games for Georgia once you get into SEC play. But all of this just seems really cool to me. It's something that, as I said before, just kind of fills me with a sense of pride. Maybe you feel the same way, a little bit of a sense of pride from you there as well. And the other thing that comes to mind about this is, the way it kind of goes back to something that Kirby Smart started talking about a couple of years ago about what his vision for Georgia football was playing in games like this each and every year. And when Smart first spoke these words, I think it was back probably spring of 2019, if I'm remembering correctly, you know, all of this seemed, you know, way far into the future. But here we are now getting ready to begin the 2021 season. And some of the stuff that Smart had said that he wanted to be true for Georgia in future years, as it turns out, that is very much on its way to occurring. Let me let you hear Kirby Smart talking about wanting to schedule the very best opponents in the country to play the very biggest games in the country, and tell me if you don't think this isn't working out pretty much exactly as Kirby Smart once said that it would. Here is Kirby Smart from a couple of years ago.
I'm thinking that to get in the playoffs, as the future goes, I don't know whether they'll ever expand it. That's not for me to even kind of divulge on, but I do think that you're going to need a quality of schedule to do that. I think that there's going to be two lost teams in the future if they've got a really tough schedule that'll be able to make that. So I want to have the best players. I want to play the best teams. Kids come to college to play big games. They don't come to play Sisters of the Poor. They want to play the best teams. So we want to go schedule the best teams. Unfortunately, you can't schedule these games but 7 to 10 years out, and that's so frustrating to me because I can't think about 7 to 10 years out. I'm trying to think about tomorrow and this year, and you're having to schedule way in advance. But we thought three Power Five opponents, non-conference, would be not groundbreaking, but we thought it would be a new thing, and we're not afraid of that. I'm not afraid to go out and play. I mean, you look at the NFL teams, and I know those are you know different players, but they play 16 teams in a season that are all good. There's no cupcake in the NFL. They play back-to-back-to-back quality opponents, and we want our fan base to get that.
So putting aside for a moment that whether or not Georgia actually wins these games, the one that's about to play against Clemson or anything else from future years, putting that aside for a moment, and putting aside for a moment whether it is true that two lost teams are about to start making the college football playoff, Kirby Smart set for himself and for his program a very simple goal. I want the best players, and I want those players to want to play in the very biggest games, and then I want to go out and schedule the very biggest games for my team each and every year. That was the goal that Smart set for his program, and lo and behold, here we are sitting here 2 years later, and according to 24/7 Sports, Georgia is slated to play the biggest game in the country for the upcoming season, all on the basis of Kirby Smart's scheduling philosophy. I think that's really cool before you even get to the idea of whether or not Georgia actually wins these games. And the other thing that Smart points out there, which I think is really interesting, because at the time that a lot of these non-conference games for Georgia started being announced, they all seemed so far into the future. They all seemed like they were never going to get here. This was never going to happen. That, yeah, Georgia's playing Notre Dame, but it's going to have to wait a million years to play the rest of these games. But do you realize that the future is actually now for Georgia and some of those games that Smart was first talking about? We are now in the stretch when they're all going to be played, starting with Clemson this year. But I have to admit, I had forgotten this. This wasn't top of mind for me. Do you realize that Georgia plays Oregon to start next season in Atlanta? What a cool thing, right? Oregon's become a true national power. Georgia will play them to begin next season. Then in 2023, Georgia plays Oklahoma. 2024, Georgia plays Clemson again. 2025, 2026, Georgia goes home and home with UCLA. Remains to be seen how good UCLA is, but it's certainly a possibility. They could also be very good. If nothing else, it's a fun trip back to Pasadena for the Dogs. In 2027, it's Florida State. In 2028, it's both Texas and Florida State. In 2029, it's both Texas and Clemson. In 2030, it's both Clemson and Ohio State. In 2031, it's Ohio State and Oklahoma. In 2032, it's Clemson again. And in 2033, it's Clemson again there as well. I mean, how interesting is all of that? The idea that Georgia is about to do in every year over the course of the next decade exactly what it's slated to do right now, which is play what appears to be on paper maybe the biggest game in the entire country. This was a goal that Kirby Smart set up for the program, to have the best players playing the biggest games. And thus far, it's working out exactly as he would have intended. Georgia number one on that list for this year and could be number one on that list for many years into the future there as well. Let me shift gears and talk about this for a moment here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp. So I thought it was interesting earlier this week current Michigan State head coach, former Colorado head coach, and also obviously former Georgia defensive coordinator Mel Tucker stopped by to visit with Mike Griffith on the Beat. This continues a little bit of a series that Mike's been a part of. He spoke to former Georgia assistant Shane Beamer the week before that. Beamer now head coach at South Carolina. Tucker stopping by to a visit this week. And in the midst of the conversation, Mike asked Mel Tucker, hey, you know, you've been around Georgia. What's it going to take to get Georgia over the hump and win a national championship? I pulled this audio off the social media thing that we shared. So there's a little bit of a music bed underneath this, but interesting to hear Tucker talk about his thoughts about how a program like Georgia, or really any program, can get over the hump and actually win a national championship. This is Mel Tucker.
That's really tough for me to say because right now I'm on the outside looking in. But in general, with the championship teams that I've been a part of, recruiting obviously is the key because, I mean, you got to get in and you got to win two games. And so you have to have as good or better players than the teams that you're going to play. And throughout the season, you're going to have to win close games. And really, those championship teams, one common value that they've had is that, you know, it's been really, there were teams of very unselfish players that bought into something that was bigger than themselves.
So listen, I understand exactly where Tucker's coming from on that. Obviously, you have to have the recruiting talent. As we've spoken about this week, Georgia ranks pretty high on that. One of the, I think, the second most talented team in the country, as Athlon Sports suggested, based on the five-year average from the 24/7 Sports Composite Team Ranking. So it seems like Georgia has that box checked. Clearly, they've got enough talent to be able to do this. You got to find a way to win those close games, as Mel Tucker pointed out. Obviously, we understand that. There's a little bit of luck involved in every run towards a championship. And as Tucker says, you got to have players who are willing to be unselfish, to kind of believe in something bigger than themselves. And that kind of ties back to something we talked about a lot last week related to the leadership that Georgia got in 2017, a staff that Mel Tucker was on. And we kind of all understand the way that kind of team concept comes together and works for the players who are involved in all that. I think we all get that. However, I think it's also important to note this, and this is not necessarily a refutation or of what Mel Tucker says, but it's a reminder of why we've talked about some of the things we've talked about on the shows in recent weeks, recent days for sure. For as important as all the stuff that Tucker just mentioned, Georgia's had the talent, hasn't quite gotten over the hump yet. Georgia's had some, you know, close wins and big games and things along those lines, but maybe just not quite enough in any season yet to truly equal to a championship. And I would say that Georgia has certainly had its share of unselfish players. You don't see a lot of strains of selfishness running through the program. So there still seems to be that missing ingredient. And this is where I think that it's important for us to all focus our mind and all really talk about what college football really looks like at the very top level and what Georgia looks like in comparison to those teams who've been among the national elites year after year after year. And to me, it's as simple as quarterback play. And, you know, Tucker's a defensive guy and, you know, maybe that's not where his mind goes. But when we talk about Georgia and its need for a national championship, when you talk about Georgia and the missing piece that's going to get Georgia over the hump, you can go on and on for a couple of minutes about leadership and intangibles and blah, 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 blah. But the truth is the real big difference between Georgia and the Clemsons, the Ohio States, the LSUs, the Alabamas, the four programs that have won national championship in the playoff era is in the years in which those teams won, they got top flight quarterback play. And as of yet, Georgia has been just south of, in most years, that truly top-flight quarterback play. So the one thing we said to you a month or two ago is that we were going to have at least the best that we could and our best attempt to have kind of a hype-free offseason. We're going to buy into the hype necessarily. We're certainly not going to do our part to fan the flames of that hysteria and that hype when it comes to Georgia football. But what we are going to try to do is be very clear about what really needs to happen. That next step, that missing piece. And for everything that Mel Tucker says that it's probably true, the truth is, in just a couple of words, you can sum up why Georgia hasn't yet won a championship and what's going to happen for it to get over that hump. They've got to find the explosive offense that shows up for an entire season that looks like what the other teams that I just mentioned have. And if that takes place for Georgia in 2021, then a national championship could soon follow. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Meriwether and Tharp. Great to have you with us. No matter how you get to us today, live on video, 10 a.m., Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, all the video platforms, podcast platforms, Spotify, Apple, Google, TuneIn Radio, all the ways in which you can find our program. Happy to have you do that. Of course, on the radio at noon every single day on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. Just really appreciate you being a big part of what we're doing here today. And a big thanks to our friends at Meriwether and Tharp for making it all possible. You know, Meriwether and Tharp is your source for Georgia divorce. What that means is the questions that you have about the divorce process, they have answers to those questions. And an audience like ours, the size of ours, obviously many of you are thinking about this. You either find yourself going through it now or you feel like you might be about to go through that. One of the best things that you can do is put a plan in place that allows you to feel whole again. Your finances, your relationship with your family, your children, all of the things related to that. The divorce process can be scary, but it can also have a positive resolution for you when you put your source for Georgia divorce, Meriwether and Tharp, to work for you. Very simple first step to you, for you. Just simply go to theatlantadivorceteam.com. When you go to theatlantadivorceteam.com, it gives you a chance to learn a whole lot more about what Meriwether and Tharp brings to the table, what they can do for you. You can take advantage of their free resources. You can set up your own free initial consultation with one of their attorneys. And then after that, you make the decision to put them to work for you. Then they will roll up their sleeves and they will go to bat, taking really good care of you in what could be one of the most challenging situations you'll ever face. My friends at Meriwether and Tharp can make all of this a little easier, a little better, and a much happier outcome on the other side. So please find them online, theatlantadivorceteam.com. All right, we're going to get Terrence Edwards in just a moment, talk some Georgia football with him. Before that, I want to go around the doghouse here for a moment. And I mentioned quarterback play before. You know, if you want to look at the missing piece for Georgia, for all the things you can kind of point to for leadership and this and that and that, the big difference between Georgia and the other teams that have won, the explosive level of offensive play, Georgia's need to match that, and a lot of that starts with the quarterback position. As I said yesterday, the Ohio States, the Alabamas, the Clemsons, the teams that are regular fixtures in the playoff, multiple first-round quarterbacks. They're about to have another one this year. They've had multiple in the past. That's kind of the story there for the teams that kind of show up on that playoff radar each and every year. Now, with that in mind, interesting to see ESPN doing its ranking of future quarterback situations around college football. Our buddy Connor Riley had a story about this at DogNation.com. Georgia coming in at number 6 on that list for the future on the basis of what they have. But it's something in particular that the writer of this, Adam Rittenberg, said, which I find to be kind of interesting. Rittenberg writes about Georgia's quarterback situation in the future. That includes JT Daniels, a starter right now, guys like Stetson Bennett, Carson Beck still waiting in the wings, newly arrival 5-star Brock Vandegrift, Gunnar Stockton, commitment for the future. This is what Rittenberg says about the quarterback situation in Georgia. Rittenberg says for ESPN.com, projecting Georgia's quarterback outlook is one of the trickiest and most significant parts of this annual exercise. ESPN's done this for a number of years. Rittenberg says the Bulldogs clearly haven't made the jump at quarterback as some of the regional competitors like Alabama, Florida, Clemson, briefly LSU. Rittenberg says, but there's enough evidence to be genuinely optimistic about the position during the next 3 seasons. And I think the optimism that Rittenberg expressed, Georgia fans probably feel. But when you want to make the comparison between Georgia and, as Rittenberg said, some of the regional powers, here's the one big takeaway I think you have to have here. And this is not just about Georgia, but it's about college football globally, I believe. That the offense gets more out of the quarterback than the quarterback gets out of the offense. In other words, you can't bring in a quarterback to save your offense. You have to build an offense that promotes the quarterback. Because, you know, you mentioned what's going on with LSU as a for instance on this. Look at LSU and look what Joe Burrow looked like in 2018 before Joe Brady got there. Good season, not great. What happened after that when Brady arrived in 2019, Burrow went on to have one of the great single season performances we'd ever seen. Following year at Alabama, Mac Jones steps in. It's important to say this as clearly and truly as it is. No one thought Mac Jones was capable of producing the kind of success that he enjoyed a year ago. That would have been an unforeseen situation prior to the start of the 2020 season. But the Steve Sarkisian Alabama offense functioned so efficiently that Mac Jones was able to sort of step in there, play the way that he played, and he's on his way to NFL riches because of that. So if you're really looking for the situation at Georgia with Daniels as the starter right now, possibly Vandegrift waiting in the wings after that, possibly Gunnar Stockton waiting in the wings after that with Carson Beck in the mix and all of this too. It's not the job of the quarterbacks to make the offense work. It's the job of the offense to make the quarterback work. We've seen that in the SEC for the next couple of seasons. Rittenberg says it's difficult to kind of project how Georgia will be at quarterback. Part of the reason is because you go back to 2019, for instance, the Georgia offense has just been a little bit erratic. But if you get the stabilizing force that you think you might get from Todd Monken, all of a sudden the Georgia quarterback position will become much more predictable. It'll be much more easy to project success for all the guys that I just mentioned, because they will be working in an offense that functions the way that it's supposed to. That's the big issue. For as much as we talk about quarterbacks, the most important figure around the Georgia offense is still Todd Monken. The recent history of the SEC shows us that, and we'll see for the good or the bad that in relationship to Georgia in the time to come. It's great to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp today. Really appreciate you being a part of the program. For more on all of this and a whole bunch of fun, let's keep the conversation going as we bring on former Georgia wide receiver Terrence Edwards.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
We will say hello here to Terrence Edwards, the great former Georgia wide receiver, a guy who certainly knows how the passing game operates and was the only receiver in Georgia history to ever amass 1,000 yards. So clearly he has a lot of credibility on topics like this. And so, Terrence, let me bring you in on what I was just saying, that when I look at what has happened for Alabama last season with Mac Jones, probably playing above what I thought his capabilities would have been, the difference in Joe Burrow year over year from 2018 to 2019, Burrow became a number one overall pick when I don't think most people probably thought that was a possibility for him back in 2018. Would you agree with me that as important as quarterback is, the offensive coordinator's role in designing an offense that works for that quarterback is still more important in college football?
Well, I think so. I mean, you just look at the success that Alabama has had throughout the years. I know back 10 years ago, it was just ground and pound, and Nick Saban has really transformed his team to be a very explosive offense. And each offensive coordinator that he's has have been able to create explosive plays with the players that they have, of course. But often it's the offensive coordinator coming in, bringing a system that allows his players to flourish.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And obviously, you make that transition, you look at what's going on at Georgia. I mean, I think the one thing that we see is that finding an offense that works as well as some of these top flight teams have had, I mean, it's just not that easy of a thing to do, right? I mean, this is one of those things that's a skill that some guys seem to possess, or maybe it's they just catch lightning in a bottle, but one way or another, this is not the kind of thing that everyone's capable of going out there and matching, because we've had some programs in college football who've been trying to do this for years and years and years, never really able to do that, that for whatever reason, when it comes to like really efficient, explosive offenses, some coordinators just seem to have that magic in a way that other guys just don't seem to have.
Exactly. I think it also goes to philosophy. Some of these guys are now the spread offense, and now everyone's trying to mimic each other, but the really good ones just always been in this type of offense all their lives. I mean, you just look at the Hal Mumby tree. Those guys have great explosive offenses, but it just been able to throw the football. You look at the best teams now are able to still run the ball effective in a pass-happy offense. So you still got to have that maybe 60-40, but you got to have that imagination to be able to open it up more with the run and pass. I think when people get away from the run and just strictly throw it, you don't see those teams win very much. It's the guys that still be able to run the ball. And you look at Najee Harris of Bama, he had like 25 rushing touchdowns this year. They were still able to run the ball, but the explosive of the passing game opened the running game up.
And when it comes to your position, wide receiver, and the guys that you know at Georgia who play that position right now, when you do look at ESPN, who says, hey, I like the future of what JT Daniels could do this year, what Brock Vandergrift might be after that, what Gunnar Stockton could be after that, how Carson Beck factors in this discussion as well, I'm sure it does fill the wide receivers with more confidence to know that, hey, you know, the guy that's going to be delivering me the football, all odds would suggest, is going to be a guy who's really capable of getting that done. My guess, Terrence, is that's going to make more wide receivers want to play for this program, and the guys who are here right now feeling more and more confident in their ability to really thrive at the highest level possible, right, knowing that when it comes to talent at the quarterback spot, Georgia pretty clearly has kind of gotten that figured out.
Oh, exactly. I mean, you just look at the guys they have in that room right now, starting with JT Daniels, and Carson Beck is the guy that seems like everyone is forgetting, but he's there for a reason. You got Brock Vandegrift in the weight, you got Gunnar Stockton. So that room is still has a lot of talented guys in there, and I think the receivers are very confident in JT Daniels to get the job done. You look at it, we threw for 400 yards twice last year, and we're still, in my opinion, still not hitting on all cylinders because I don't think Todd Monken has released let all his offensive packages go yet. So now they have a quarterback that they trust. They have a quarterback they feel that can get the job done and put them in a right position. All the receivers have to do now is do their job and get open and catch the football.
I talked off the top of the program with the fact that one of the national websites has Georgia-Clemson ranked as the most anticipated game of the upcoming season. And you kind of point out that, you know, Georgia's got Oregon after that in 2022, Oklahoma coming up, Florida State, Texas, Ohio State. You know, in future years, Georgia's going to be playing a lot of these kind of games. Terrence, how much fun do you think it is for the average player to know that if you do come to Georgia, you have a chance to play in gigantic football games each and every year, and you have a chance to maybe play, as Georgia arguably is doing this year, in the most anticipated game of the season? How much fun is that for good players to play in the biggest games?
Oh, it's fun. I knew in 2002 – we opened up with Clemson, and that's all we talked about that whole summer is we get opened up against just our brothers that are our way up the road that we normally don't get to play, but we knew all the players. So it's an opportunity for these guys to showcase their talents against some of the top teams in the country. Normally we wouldn't get an opportunity to play Clemson unless it's in the BCS playoffs. So it's fun. You know, you get to see Oregon, team that you normally don't get to play against. And we all saw how the Notre Dame series went. It was electric, those two games. So that's why you come to Georgia, to play the best of the best.
When you were at Georgia, you mentioned you get a chance to go play Clemson 2002, the return date 2003. You weren't a part of that. We've seen Georgia, you know, a couple of years ago, get to travel to Notre Dame. Future Georgia teams, as I said before, are going to be traveling kind of all over the place and playing in this really these big games. As a player to yourself, do you wish you got to travel to more places kind of outside the SEC footprint? Would that have been fun for you to kind of go on some of those big trips and see those Georgia fans travel those hundreds of miles to be a part of that there as well? Is that something that you would have enjoyed being able to do?
Oh, most definitely. I actually got the opportunity to go to that Notre Dame game up in South Bend. And, man, I tell you, as a former player, someone just sitting in the stands now as a fan, I would love to have the opportunity to go down and play in that historic stadium. I mean, the atmosphere was crazy, and the fans that we brought to South Bend was, I mean, you just don't understand how much that means to the players, having that whole stadium with a sea of red. And I wish we'd got the opportunity to go outside our region and play a team like South Bend or go to Oregon and play. So I would have loved that, and I think every player relished that opportunity to go in someone else's region and win.
So let me talk to you about something, Terrence, that I'm probably guessing you wouldn't expect me to ask you about, but you do live in Atlanta, so I think you have probably a pretty good opinion on this. I saw where Mel Kiper, the ESPN NFL draft expert, has the Falcons trading up from the number 4 spot to earlier in the draft to go take Zach Wilson, the quarterback out of BYU, when someone like me, who is obviously a Georgia fan, would love the idea that, hey, maybe just sort of sit there at 4 if you want quarterback, then it seems like Justin Fields could be right there for you at number 4. Now, listen, I won't pretend to know who's going to be the better pro between Fields and Wilson or really any of these guys, I think Trevor Lawrence included. I think the history shows you that's a very difficult thing to predict when it comes to some of this kind of stuff. But, I mean, if the Falcons have a chance to draft Justin Fields, shouldn't they probably do that?
I think so. I take it, you know, for someone who played 11 years in the professional ranks. If Justin Fields and Zach Wilson grades are very close, me personally, there's two folds to an organization. It's about winning games and about putting butts in the seat.
Yep.
Justin Fields will bring people to the stadium once they're able to get back into full capacity. I played with Michael Vick. Michael Vick was an electric quarterback. He wasn't known for his throwing ability. He was known for making the big plays, and people came to the stadium every Sunday to watch Mike play and see what show that he was going to be able to put on. And I think Justin can bring that hometown feel a guy that's born and raised in the state of Georgia. I think he would bring that feel back to the Mercedes-Benz Dome. So I think as Tua, if their grades are close, I say go with Justin because he's a hometown kid and he will put butts in the seats, and it's about making money at the end of the day.
I totally, Terrence, that's 100% my opinion on this, that you know this is a guy from the Atlanta area. I think there are a lot of Georgia fans, and listen, you'll acknowledge the same way that I will, that at times Fields, you know, tenure at Georgia was a little bit controversial. I certainly get that. But listen, even after we went to Ohio State, I still loved watching him play and frankly would have liked the chance to kind of cheer for him more. I obviously couldn't cheer for him at Ohio State, but Fields is a guy that I would certainly as a fan enjoy cheering for. I'm also a Falcons fan in addition to being a Georgia fan. To get a second chance with Justin Fields to me would seem like a ton of fun. I'm guessing a good number of Georgia fans feel that way. And I know for a fact a lot of it, just Atlantans would love to have one of their own kind of back here in town playing for that. And I think you're right. Given the fact that it's difficult to predict which quarterback of this group is going to be the best, it's far easier to predict which guy's going to make the most money for you in terms of, you know, tickets and everything that goes along with that. And I don't think there's any doubt that Justin Fields would be that guy.
Exactly. I just think, you know, he's a guy that, you know, for Georgia fans, we all understand. I still love the kid. He's a very good kid. So we can all take that, you know, the reason why he left, but that was his personal choice. And whatever you feel about it, whatever you feel about it. But I think he's a tremendous quarterback. He still has a lot of developing to do. But in a day, it's about wins and about making money. And I think with him being from the state of Georgia, him being from the Atlanta area, I think there are a lot of people who root for him and come see him play every Sunday like they did Michael Vick.
Well, Terrence, it's always great to have you part of the program. Listen, coming up in not before too long, you're going to get a chance to be talking about some spring practice. There's a lot of big things going on for the Georgia Bulldogs, obviously heading towards the NFL draft there as well. I always appreciate your expertise. We talk about all of this stuff here on our program. Thank you so much for being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp today. Hope you have a great week, and we'll look forward to getting the chance to speak to you soon there as well.
Thank you, B.A.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Really lucky to get a chance to have a guy like Terrence on the show who kind of comes from the football standpoint from so many different angles, so many different spots, whether it be, you know, himself as a former player at Georgia and what kind of goes along with that. As he said, a guy that's worked and played professionally and kind of, you know, kind of knows that part of it there as well. Really, really lucky to be able to do that. And by the way, don't forget this. I forgot to mention this with Terrence on. The other thing that I'm really proud of for Terrence is the fact that he's working so hard to give other football players the same opportunity that he had during his football playing career there as well. So if you want to kind of follow in on that, just find Terrence on any of the social media platforms. He's very active on social media, Twitter, Instagram, everything else. This is a guy who's worked tirelessly with a lot of the receivers who are on the Georgia roster right now, a lot of the guys who could be on the Georgia roster in future years. Terrence is great at all of that, and he's a personal coach working with pass catchers, working with wide receivers. He will do a great job for you or your son, depending on, you know, which stage of life you're in when it comes to all of this. So please check out Terrence Edwards Wide Receiver Academy there on social media, and you can learn all about all the stuff that Terrence is doing there. Really good stuff all the way around. And he's 100% right about this, too. And I realize that, look, you know, not everybody who tunes into our show lives in the state of Georgia, lives in the Atlanta area. We have Georgia fans all across the country that tune in, so therefore your favorite NFL team may not be the Atlanta Falcons. It does happen to be that, though, we do broadcast the show from here in the Atlanta area every single day, and Falcons are my favorite NFL team. As I said before, as someone who enjoyed Justin Fields while he was at Georgia briefly and would have liked the chance to cheer for him a little longer, I obviously can appreciate him at Ohio State, but I certainly can't root for the Buckeyes. Most Georgia fans would probably agree with that. To get a second chance for him in Atlanta, I think would be a ton of fun. The flip side of this is, I mean, the Falcons deserve everything they get if they trade up to go bring in a quarterback from BYU that most people in Atlanta would not enjoy rooting for nearly as much as Justin Fields. So that's out there from Mel Kiper. I think you can actually read more about this at DogNation.com, including where the Georgia guys, UGA guys, kind of fall in the latest mock from Kiper we had towards the NFL draft coming up there in the month of April. Here's something interesting as we transition to our SEC through. The other day we brought you the story of Jamarian Gooch, the Tennessee offensive line signee that had been released from his letter of intent. To one degree, Gooch probably flew under the radar a little more than Dylan Brooks, who was heavily in the spotlight because, as it was kind of explained by the Brooks camp, Tennessee was very slow to release him from his letter of intent after Jeremy Pruitt, the coach that Brooks thought he was signing to play for, was fired, and Josh Heupel was moving in. Tennessee kind of has its own side of the story. But there was a little bit of a, you know, kind of a war of words within the media related to Dylan Brooks. It certainly seems like that Tennessee, upon releasing him, did not want Brooks to go to an SEC school. It was largely assumed that he would go to Auburn. Eventually, Tennessee completely relented, and Brooks did pretty much what everybody thought he was going to do, which was he basically immediately committed to Auburn. So while all of this was going on with the pass rusher, Dylan Brooks, there was another guy out there who was also released from his letter of intent. Now, you had, you know, Jamarian Gooch, the offensive lineman. The reason why I bring this up is because there was, for a brief moment, a little bit of online chatter related to Gooch and the possibility of being here at Georgia, that maybe that this was what Smart was referencing, Kirby Smart was referencing, when he went on 680 The Fan, the Atlanta radio station, not too long ago, and said, hey, there's some outside-the-box thinking we can do still for the class of 2021. I think some people thought, well, maybe Gooch might be that, and you may have seen the online chatter on this yourself. The bottom line is that's not happening. Jamarian Gooch is now going to Missouri. So the last couple of letter of intent releases that Tennessee has granted, both those guys, the pass rusher Brooks, the offensive lineman Gooch, they are now on their way to the SEC. And in the case of Gooch, as I said before, kind of an end to what was kind of a brief and quiet rumor mill related to maybe Georgia be looking to add another offensive lineman, but that's not going to go down here. Jamarian Gooch on his way to Missouri instead. As I mentioned a moment ago, a lot of chatter right now related to the NFL draft and, you know, where the Georgia guys are going to go. You know, you seem to see Aziz Ojulari kind of moving up draft boards at least a little bit, at least the media version of that. You're hopeful if you're a UGA fan, at least one of these defensive backs gets his way into the first round. Possibility of a couple, I guess, between Eric Stokes and Tyson Campbell. I mentioned the Justin Fields drama on all of this. But there is another SEC-related draft story that I find to be pretty fascinating. It's easy to forget that Ja'Marr Chase ever even existed because we haven't seen him play football in such a long time. He opted out of this past season for LSU. But Chase was incredibly dominant in the SEC a year ago, along his way to winning the Biletnikoff Award and leading LSU to a national championship. And so there is a chance that Ja'Marr Chase could be the number one receiver drafted in the upcoming NFL draft. And if it's not him, it could be the 2020 version of what Chase had done for LSU. Devontae Smith, who also led Alabama to a national championship on his way to winning the Heisman Trophy. I think it's really interesting to see the debate that's ongoing. Rank-and-file fans, media types, everybody else in between, about which of these two receivers should be taken first. The guy that dominated the SEC in 2019 that we haven't seen since then, Ja'Marr Chase, the guy who just dominated college football and the SEC from the receiver spot in a way that I don't think I've ever seen anybody do before. What did Devontae have, 1,800 yards receiving this past season? So I think it's just really interesting the way in which the opt-outs from the 20 season have kind of given us these comparisons for guys we haven't seen in a year and guys that we just saw dominate. To me, though, the difference maker in Smith and Chase is not related to the guy that's played the most recently. From an NFL standpoint, and y'all tell me if you think I'm wrong about this. From an NFL standpoint, I would have a lot of questions related to the size of Devontae Smith. Clearly, he was plenty big to dominate college football. Georgia fans can certainly attest to that as much as anybody can. But is Devontae Smith big enough to be a great NFL receiver? Like, that's the one thing that might lead me to take Ja'Marr Chase over Devontae Smith, knowing that Smith was plenty good enough, but he was also plenty good enough in an offense that was, for the most part, de-pantsing people back during the 2020 season. Chase probably benefited from Joe Brady's acumen in 2019, but Chase, to me, just seems to look a little more like the prototypical receiver there. So that's going to be a fun debate between Chase and Smith. I guess I'll cast my lot with the former LSU guy all the way around. I thought it was interesting that Ross Bjork, the Texas A&M athletic director, who is among the most outspoken SEC athletic directors, I think you need some of this. You need an athletic director who's kind of willing to stir the pot from time to time. Bjork, going back to his time at Ole Miss, now at A&M, is probably one of the guys that can do that. he is calling for, saying that his hope and expectation is for full stadiums in 2021. No surprise there. You know, Dan Mullen thought that A&M's crowd was an advantage for them and the win they got against Florida this past season. So it's probably not a surprise that Texas A&M would be among the SEC teams kind of pushing the envelope related to attendance. And I think all of this, and once again, goodness knows, I'm going to do everything I can to kind of sidestep whatever might be, you know, politically controversial related to all of this. But I think the entire issue with how many fans you're allowed to have in the stadium in college football coming up this fall is going to be incredibly complicated. Because, like, the one thing I think you see when you watch the news, and I don't care, you know, what your personal feelings are on anything, it's just kind of hard to know what normal is going to look like a few months from now and when we can get back to true back to normal. I mean, it seems like the vaccine rollout's probably going a little bit better. I know my mom's about to get the second dose. My in-laws have gotten their second dose. My grandmother's about to get the second dose of the vaccine. So seems like more people are getting, and it's going to eventually trickle down to those of us who are a little bit younger on all of that. But it's still kind of difficult to know exactly how it is that you get back to normal. Bjork seemingly optimistic about fans and the stance of this upcoming season. I certainly hope that's true. Because as I said off the top of the program, you know, for as anticipated as Georgia-Clemson is and all the other big games will take place this season, what we saw a year ago was big games are made smaller by fewer fans in the stands. That the games may look good on TV, they may be fun, but they just don't have the same gigantic feel if you don't have all the hype around the game kind of conjured up by media, if you don't have all of the passion in the stands that's produced by fans. Big games don't feel quite as big. So obviously I hope Ross Bjork is right about this. No one wants to sacrifice health and safety on the way to this, but college football is undoubtedly better when there are fans in the stands, and maybe we'll get a chance to see that. A couple very quick stories here. Saw where UCF's new athletic director is saying that he's going to reach out to Tennessee, the old UCF athletic director Danny White, about scheduling a game between UCF and the Vols. Unfortunately, if those two teams played soon, I'm afraid that UCF might be a point spread favorite. But there's a part of me that kind of rolls my eyes at about all of this, given the fact that UCF in the past had a chance to schedule games against SEC opponents and has turned down the chance to do so. A two-for-one opportunity with Florida. UCF didn't want that. UCF would much rather claim national championships as opposed to actually go out there and earn them. So it's cute that the Knights are talking about playing Tennessee now, but given a chance to play SEC teams in the past, they have sidestepped that opportunity. And then finally, there's this. Did you see, I don't have the video to show you of this, but did you see that Tennessee's baseball team, celebrating a home run recently, put out the McDonald's bag? Of course, many of you kind of know the McDonald's bag as the infamous prop associated with Jeremy Pruitt, the Dan Patrick Show rumor that Tennessee was stuffing cash in the McDonald's bag to pay football recruits. I never believed the story, but I do think the story is a ton of fun. Apparently, the Tennessee baseball team thought it was fun, too. They brought a McDonald's bag out for a recent home run celebration. So pretty funny all the way around on that. I'm guessing the football team, though, wasn't too entertained by that. We'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp, let's get ready to roll on out the door here. A couple of very funny golden shoes. One first-time winner, one repeat winner. Let's take a look at the first one here as we congratulate someone here today. How about Georgia on Tap, who I believe is stepping in to win for the very first time. He puts that on Twitter. When Dan Mullen sees his early signing period signees and realizing that it's all back to the portal, he kind of gives us kind of a Stargate UFG reference there. Yeah, Mullen, not a big winner on signing day typically, forced to go to the transfer portal instead. Good job by Georgia on Tap there with a very funny Dan Mullen social media edit. Will make you a golden shoe winner because of that. And how about our buddy Mad Dog in diving back again? No team prouder of a four-loss season the Florida Gators were this past year. Mad Dog says when you brag about a four-loss season and you see Mullen holding up almost like the Richard Nixon-style two twos there, pretty funny to see. Good job by Mad Dog. You're a golden shoe winner as well. How about Gator Hater Countdown? 247 days. Those Georgia Bulldogs get some revenge against those lousy, stinking Gators. Y'all have a great day. See you back here tomorrow. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp.